From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo makes a rare endorsement in a state Senate race. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on potential threats to public broadcasting. And Senator Schumer unveils legislation to crack down on scrap metal thefts. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Cuomo made a rare endorsement in a state Senate contest this week when he backed Democratic incumbent Joseph Addabbo, who's locked in a tight race with a Republican challenger. Addabbo was one of a handful of senators who provided swing votes to pass gay marriage last year. As the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, the repercussions from the historic vote last year continue to play out in this fall's elections.
When the New York State Senate voted on same-sex marriage last year, four Republicans and three Democrats switched their positions to approve the measure after voting no the first time gay marriage came up for a vote in 2009. The Republican senators who voted yes were praised for their courage by Governor Cuomo and others, but it may have been a poor decision for their immediate political futures. Two of the four will not be returning to Albany for another term. Senator James Alesi of the Rochester area did not seek re-election. And Senator Roy McDonald of the Capital Region lost in a Republican primary in mid-September. Senator Stephen Saland of the Hudson Valley barely squeaked by in a close primary contest. Senator Mark Grisanti of the Buffalo area was the only one to easily beat back a primary challenge. But others say the successful gay marriage vote may have averted a larger threat for Republicans who have been struggling to hold on to a narrow majority in the Senate. Bruce Jory is a political consultant and SUNY Albany political science professor.
I think this could look very different the day after November 7th than it did September 14th, which was the day after the primary.
Jory says if the Senate GOP had not permitted the vote to go forward, some Republican incumbents would have been the target of pro-gay marriage groups. The groups could have helped Democratic opponents in many districts where voters are evenly split between the two parties, or in some cases where registered Democrats hold a slight edge. He says Senator Skelos was smart to agree to hold the vote, even though he and most of the other Republicans plan to vote no.
If they had a well-financed Democratic opponent powered by this gay marriage advocacy and money, it could have been a problem. So I think Senator Skelos showed great leadership in maneuvering to get this up for a vote and working with the governor.
And Governor Cuomo has had a good working relationship with Senate Republicans, partly due to their acquiescence on the same-sex marriage vote. Without that cooperation, Jory says, Cuomo might have campaigned actively for Democrats to take over the Senate. So far, Cuomo's remained relatively neutral, offering to back one Republican senator, Roy McDonald, and one Democratic senator, Joe Addabbo of Queens, who had provided the swing votes.
The thing that seems to be driving the governor's endorsements for either party seems to be those he considered having cast a profile and courage vote. And for Addabbo, casting a yes vote after casting a no vote when it came up in 2009. He cast a yes vote in 2011. It's no surprise that the governor would endorse him.
Cuomo offered to endorse Senator McDonald if McDonald were to continue on after the primary on the Independence Party line for the November election, but McDonald decided to drop out instead. And on Columbus Day, Cuomo endorsed Addabbo. The two other Democratic senators who switched their votes and helped approve gay marriage will also not be returning to the Capitol for another term, but the end of their political careers had nothing to do with their same-sex marriage vote. Senator Carl Krueger of Brooklyn is now serving prison time for a bribery conviction, and Senator Shirley Huntley of Queens lost September's Democratic primary after she was arrested and charged with funneling state money into a phony charity. She's pleaded not guilty. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, going to turn to the national scene in a debate because it makes its way all the way down here to the Legislative Gazette and public radio. And that's Mitt Romney in the debate against President Obama said the first thing he would cut was Big Bird.
That's right, David. There was probably a very good reason for it. It was clear to me that he was scripted. So that what happened is when the moderator asks him what he would do to balance the budget or to make sure that we don't have a deficit, he names public broadcasting as his number one thing. Now, that's extraordinary. I think the rationale, at least this is what I make of it, was to strengthen his conservative base who have always had suspicions so they would be motivated to go out and vote for the guy. But there is an old song about a horsey and a flea and three blind mice, and the horsey slipped and fell on the flea. Whoops, said the flea, there's a horsey on me. Or way down south where the microbes grow, an elephant stepped on a microbe's toe. The microbe looked up with tears in his eyes and said, why don't you pick on someone your own size? Point being here, public broadcasting is nothing. It's a flea. It's a dot. And he goes on to say, and I'm not going to borrow from the Chinese to support Big Bird. Okay. Well, of course, Big Bird becomes the big thing in the drive. Everybody wants a Big Bird beanbag and all the rest. So what has happened is that Romney saying that the first thing he would do is kill public broadcasting and kill Big Bird has tremendous repercussions for public broadcasters all over the state. Because if, in fact, he does that, and I have no doubt that he and Ryan, who already has that in his budget, will carry out their word if he gets elected president of the United States. If Romney does, that will mean that the state appropriation, which is very small, but something would be important. And what if the governor decides, well, you know, I'm not sure I like the way what they're saying or how they're saying it, because after all, that's what the Romney thing is all about, and cuts this down. In the end, most people who are listening to this right now, although not all, support public radio with their non-tax dollars, even though the tax dollars are certainly theirs. And again, it's going to give new meaning to the concept of listener-supported radio.
As you often talked about, Alan, information is power.
Information is power. And David, you make a very good point. We do know that the 1%ers in this country have spent a lot of time and money to buy many of the outlets, of the commercial outlets. And what's happened is you get people like Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, you know, Michael Savage, and all these people who basically are vassals of the people who have the most money. They come out against Obamacare, they come out against social programs and all the rest. We know what that's all about. So if you have that money, you can buy radio stations. Right now, the only thing they can have are the public radio stations. And as a result of that, the public radio and television stations become a target. That's what this is all about. It's not that they're left wing. It's that they do a good job of both sides of the story. And that's the last thing these people want.
And many people might believe this, but you've always argued that the public should be supporting public radio if they want this kind of information.
Well, that's right, except that it's not the model. In this society, the model is, well, capitalism. You want a New York Times on the weekend where we live, it's $6. You go, you give them $6, they give you the paper. In this country, public radio is a new concept, if you think about it. You want public radio, then you've got to take it on faith, the people who run the radio stations and public television stations, that people will support them. And that's all we can hope. That after they've used the product, then they give you the money because they're satisfied.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Senator Charles Schumer was in Kingston this week to call attention to the recent rash of scrap metal thefts in the city. He unveiled new legislation there that would crack down on thieves and provide law enforcement with tools to protect citizens and infrastructure. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas.
Issuing an alternative currency is perfectly legal as long as it is treated as taxable income and consists of paper bills rather than coins. The sour economy has generated interest in establishing regional currencies. Liz Pullman is a member of the initiating group of Transition Troy, where there's talk of establishing Troy Bucks.
We want our community to be resilient and to be a good place to live and for us to be able to meet our needs locally and regionally. And we believe that a local currency will help us in that regard.
Dr. Glenn Culbertson has studied local currencies and local economies. He says there are a number of options to be considered, including where to draw the borders of a region the local money could be used in.
Local currencies are spent locally. They stay in our community. They are not pulled out to corporate headquarters in another state. They don't go outside the country. They increase the economic activity of currency circulation within the local area and encourage local sourcing of your product.
Culbertson sees alternate currency serving as an economic spark plug, helping power local economies, where more of what people need is produced closer to home. He says it is not out of the question that such currency could be card-driven. Such a system already exists in San Francisco.
To some stores, it operates kind of like a loyalty program. The card spends like a credit card, but it can operate as a local currency.
Culbertson envisions a local currency that would circulate from Saratoga to southern Albany County.
The larger the area that might potentially supply them with business inputs, the more easier it would be for businesses to accept it.
Culbertson expects money traders would serve as agents between citizens in the Capital District who might want to exchange their local currency for one accepted in the mid or lower Hudson Valley. And given Troy's proximity to Massachusetts, there could also be an opportunity to trade Troy Bucks for Berkshires. That six-year-old program has established alternative currency in the Berkshires. Alice Maggio is coordinator of the Berkshires program at the New Economics Institute. She explains Berkshires are backed by U.S. dollars.
Yes, at this point. They are not supposed to be forever. This is just one stage in the progression of Berkshires. So the goal is to have an independent currency that's not backed by U.S. dollars, but is backed by local production.
So go to any of several banks in western Massachusetts, hand a teller $95, and get back $100 worth of Berkshires. Maggio explains one of the goals is to develop a loan program where those Berkshires can be used to establish new businesses without U.S. dollar backing.
Because we know that these loans are going to be good loans. They're going to be carefully vetted loans, and they're going to be small loans that can be paid back in full. In the making of the loan, you're guaranteeing more local production. So they're going to hold, the Berkshires are going to hold their value. And so that's the point where Berkshires can be independent from the dollar.
The loan program could get underway as soon as next year. Liz Pullman points out there are around 150 transition communities in the United States.
Local citizens are understanding that it is necessary to not wait for government and to get communities working together in order to build positive futures that are less reliant on oil and that are recognizing the need for resiliency in our communities.
This Friday evening, there will be a public discussion in Troy exploring how a local independent currency can complement national currency. There's more information on our website, wamc.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Forever Wild is the term in New York's Constitution used to describe state forest preserves in the Adirondacks. Community leaders in and around the park have used that term to inform their vision for economic development. Their slogan and the name of a conference held annually at Clarkson University in Potsdam is Forever Wired. As the Innovation Trail's Joanna Richard reports, the fourth conference continued a push to expand broadband internet access and economic opportunity in the Adirondacks.
Jeff Roussel is the poster boy for the Forever Wired vision of the Adirondack North Country region. Both he and his wife grew up in Messina, and like many young aspiring professionals, they moved to a metropolitan area to begin their careers. Jeff Roussel got a job in Boston with a global software company. Then, in 2002, the couple got the news that would bring them back to the North Country.
My wife and I actually were starting a family, and we learned that we were about to have triplets.
With three kids on the way, Jeff Roussel and his wife wanted to be close to their families, but he wanted to keep his job. His employer was okay with him telecommuting, but Roussel wasn't sure if high-speed internet would be available where the couple wanted to live.
I joke that when we learned we were about to have a rather large family really quickly, my wife's first call was to her mother, and my first call was to Time Warner Cable to find out if we could get a fast connection. Because really, without it, you couldn't do this. You couldn't do this effectively without telephone and web conferencing on a daily basis.
Roussel was lucky. The Colton area had broadband available. He kept his job, and a young professional family moved back to the North Country. And they found there were benefits to the move, aside from being closer to family support.
I mean, it's a wonderful area. We're both, my wife and I, are both very into the outdoors, so being able to live in the Adirondacks, yet still have a career in a field that I was happy in was a great opportunity. My children are able to, you know, run down the hill and jump off the dock and go swimming every day. And if we had lived in a Boston suburb, that wouldn't be possible.
Roussel's story is one economic development officials and community leaders hope to hear again and again, with broadband access coming to more of the park and the surrounding region. Tony Collins is president of Clarkson University and co-chairs the North Country Regional Economic Development Council. He says when the Forever Wired Conference was started 3 years ago, there was a backbone of broadband through much of St. Lawrence County.
If it wasn't reaching out into rural areas, into individual residences and farms, and certainly wasn't into the Adirondacks.
All that has changed now, Collins says. 2 out of 4 major federal broadband stimulus projects came to the Adirondack North Country, and the Regional Economic Development Council there has made broadband access a priority.
We're now at the we're seeing broadband installed, and St. Lawrence Internet Connect is hooking up 240 homes a month. It's just a great story. And so we now have broadband. Next question is people to adopt it and then use it for their business. And that's what we're changing our focus to.
Seasonal residents make up about 40% of the park's homeowners. A recent survey of them discovered that nearly half would be interested in living in the park year-round if telecommuting was an option.
And when you think of the compatibility with the objectives of the park, you know, green and sustainable, I can't think of a better employment than telecommuting from that perspective.
And a larger park population, comprised in part of well-educated telecommuters, would create the need for more services to support them. In Potsdam, I'm Joanna Richards for the Innovation Trail.
That was the Innovation Trail's Joanna Richards reporting. Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between 5 upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Officials in Essex County, New York, have been working to close a $13 million budget gap in the 2013 budget. While they hope a pending sale of the county-run nursing home will make a difference, they say mandate relief from the state would be more helpful. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
The rural Adirondack County has one of the lowest tax rates in New York State and has been using their fund balance to hold the line on property tax increases. Essex County Manager Dan Palmer says that may not be possible much longer.
With Essex County, the board, in what was essentially the best intentions, held the tax levy artificially low for over 10 years by using fund balance to cover what is essentially reoccurring yearly cost. That has really, over the last 2 or 3 years, started to catch up.
County officials do not want a substantial hike in taxes, so Palmer says they are assessing other ways to reduce the budget gap.
We've got to balance the budget. Even if we design some kind of, and that's what we're talking about, is designing some kind of a three-year plan that would work to balance the budget over 3 years rather than all one jump in 1 year. But we still have to look at whatever services that we're not going to provide. Now, last year we proposed to eliminate a lot of services, and a lot of people did not want us to do that. It becomes difficult, especially in rural counties. The county provides a tremendous amount of services that people count on.
Among the services Essex County officials want to relinquish is the county-owned nursing home. Officials hope a pending sale of the Horace Nye Nursing Home will help close the gap. But County Board of Supervisors Chair Randy Douglas says it will neither close it nor provide long-term budget relief.
We anticipate a contract being signed soon, but even if it's signed, you know, you go through a process where you still got a budget for this year. So for 2013, we have to budget as we normally do. We're looking at so many things. We need mandate relief. I'm on the NYSEC Board of Directors, and this is a huge thing for us. Last year, the governor did a step in the right direction on reducing the growth rate on Medicaid. Medicaid, the cost of it is being pushed down to county governments. That's the problem. If you took away Medicaid as the responsibility of Essex County government, we'd be lowering taxes. That's just one item, but it's a huge item to us. Mandate relief is the number one issue that's driving the tax levy up.
Finance Committee Chair, Town of Moriah Supervisor Tom Scazzafava, is budget liaison officer for the Board of Supervisors. He says many of the stresses on their coffers are due to requirements at the state level.
There's a number of reasons that we have this gap. Primarily the cost of most of the programs, if not all, they're mandated by the state of New York. And the state of New York has reduced our revenues, monies that were reimbursed for offering these programs significantly. That's one issue. Health insurance. We're seeing a large increase in health insurance is another problem. Retirement. Another significant increase. You know, one of the things that really is troubling is that the state of New York, who touts the 2% tax cap, and I'm not criticizing that, you know, we definitely got to get a handle on property tax. But in the meantime, they continue to reduce our revenues, but also mandate us to provide these services. And of course, we know that the cost of everything else continues to increase, such as fuel and maintenance costs and so on.
The Essex County budget must be finalized by the end of December.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number again, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1241. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.